Welcome to the EIOU, a podcast about Austria. I'm Thames Darwin and I'll be your host. You might ask yourself, how much is there to learn about so small a country? After all, Austria has only 9 million people, making it just a little bigger in population than New York City. And it's only about the size of the state of Maine. So what is there to know? The answer is a lot. It's a lot because the history of Austria is tied up with the history of Germany, which you might already know, but also with the history of all of Central Europe and even, for a short period, of Spain, the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and parts of France. From the emergence of Austria as a monarchy in the 10th century, through the rise of the powerful Habsburg family, the Thirty Years' War, the Age of Revolutions, the long 19th century, and two world wars. By telling the story of Austria, we tell the story of Europe and, to some extent, the story of the world. After all, the title of this podcast comes from the motto of the 15th century Habsburg Emperor Frederick III.
Aller Erdreich ist Österreich untertan.
That is, all the world is subject to Austria. So where does this history begin? There are many years in which I could have begun. However, there are already excellent podcasts covering the history of the German people. I'm thinking primarily of the podcast on Germany, which I strongly recommend. And although Austrians will to a large extent identify as Germans, their historical path is separate enough that it's worth leaving German history. From around the time of the fall of Rome, when the German people first enter recorded history, to the Middle Ages, in the hands of those who have gone before me, we will begin in the 10th century. But before we begin, two things. First, who am I? You might have already figured out that this is an AI-generated voice. I decided to use it because I have a mad stammer and I don't have the time right now to edit out all my ums and ers. Maybe in a while I'll have enough time to do the voiceovers myself. We'll see how it goes. So the AI voice I'm using is named Ethan. The other thing is that my name is not really Thames Darwin. It's actually Andrew, but I've used this pseudonym for a while, so I'm going to continue using it here. At least for now. I'm a graduate student in history studying Central Europe. So part of what I'm hoping to do in this podcast is become more fluent in the history I'm currently studying. I'm also somewhat rare in America in being part Austrian myself. My grandfather's parents came from a small village in western Austria near the borders with Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and Germany. My grandmother was Jewish and descended from Jews who emigrated to the United States from Bavaria and Bohemia in the middle of the 19th century. Both Bavaria and Bohemia were then under Austrian rule. So one half of my ancestry is at least nominally Austrian, and one quarter fully so. That's who I am. The second thing to do before we begin is to give you fair warning. I'm going to need to define several terms as we go along. With time, it's likely that the number of times I'll need to take a step aside and tell you what something means will decrease. But for now, take it as a given that we'll be stopping fairly often to clarify things. So let's begin. It is in the 10th century, specifically 972, that Austria is formally created. When Austria is created, it is created as a markgrafschaft of the Holy Roman Empire. And already we need to stop. We have two terms that we need to define, markgrafschaft and Holy Roman Empire. The first is actually less complex than the second. What is a markgrafschaft? If we break down the word into its constituent parts, first, we have mark. It's a German word that translates into march in English. The word march refers to a border region of a country. Denmark, for instance, is a border region for Germany beyond which Danish people live. Graf is the German word for count, as in the title of nobility just below a duke. So a markgraf is a noble who rules over a march in the same way that a king rules over a kingdom or a duke rules over a duchy. The word for markgraf in English is Marcus, like the Marcus of Queensberry, the 19th century British noble who gave us the rules for boxing, or Marquis in French. The term I'll use here is Margrave, just to remind us that we're talking about Germans. Schaft, by the way, is a suffix from German that translates roughly into ship in English, like in friendship.
Freundschaft
is German for friendship. So a markgrafschaft is a piece of land, called in English a margraviate. Austria was created as a margraviate of the Holy Roman Empire, and it was ruled by a margrave. The second term is Holy Roman Empire. It's going to be difficult to be as precise in defining this term as we were in defining the last one, because the term's meaning changes a lot over time. What many people know about the HRE is what Voltaire famously said about it, that it was neither holy, nor Roman, nor an empire. And his point was certainly true, but that doesn't tell us a lot about what it actually was. The HRE wasn't what you'd call today a country. Britannica says the HRE can be regarded as a political institution, or approached from the point of view of political theory, or treated in the context of the history of Christendom, as the secular counterpart of a world religion. The history of the empire is also not to be confused or identified with the history of its constituent kingdoms. Germany and Italy, though clearly they are interrelated, the constituent territories retained their identity. The emperors, in addition to the imperial crown, also wore the crowns of their kingdoms. End quote. For the first couple hundred years after its creation, the HRE was very powerful, as was the emperor. Depending on which version you put more stock in, the HRE was created either in 800, when Pope Leo III crowned a Frankish king named Charles as emperor. He would go on to be called Charles the Great, or in French, Charlemagne. Or the HRE was created in 962, when Pope John XII gave the title to another Frankish king named Otto, who would go on to be called Otto the Great. Several ideas went into the creation of the Holy Roman Empire. One was a desire to reincarnate the Roman Empire in the West, particularly given the extent to which the actual successor state to the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire based in Constantinople, was charting its own course. Another idea behind the HRE was unification of European military power to beat back the advance of Muslim armies across the Pyrenees from Spain and into what today is France. Much of what is France today was held by the Franks, thus the name, in the 9th century, so Charlemagne and later Otto, as Franks, seemed likely candidates to lead such an alliance. Most importantly, the HRE marked an attempt to fuse religious power, held by the Pope, with temporal power, held by the Emperor. This fusion was achieved by having the Pope crown the Emperor, demonstrating the Pope's approval. As an Emperor, the leader of the HRE was the highest-ranking monarch in Central Europe, but there were numerous other monarchs who ranked below him and who technically wielded a lot of power themselves. There are three main things to take away for now about the Holy Roman Empire. First, it was a confederation of mostly German-speaking states, each with its own leader but who were at least in theory subordinate to the emperor. Second, despite the role played by the Pope in crowning the emperor, beginning in the 13th century, the HRE was an elective monarchy. It's too long of a story to go into here, but over the course of time, the lesser monarchs of the HRE, that is, those ranking below the emperor, would be the people electing candidates to be Holy Roman Emperor, who then would be crowned by the Pope. As time went on, the Pope's role would recede and those of the monarchs would increase. Third and finally, although the form that the HRE would take over time would change drastically, it stuck around until 1806, so we'll be hearing about it again and again. Finally, we return to Austria. Austria can be said to have several founding dates. One is 972. In that year, Otto the Great created the Margraviate called Austria from lands reconquered from the Hungarians, also called the Magyars. The man named as the first Margrave of Austria was Burchard. We don't know a lot about Burchard other than that he was related by marriage to the then reigning Bavarian royals. Burchard, unfortunately for him, didn't last long. Only 4 years after being named the Margrave, Burchard joined Duke Henry II of Bavaria in an uprising against Emperor Otto II, who was Otto the Great's son. The rebellion was put down quickly and Burchard had Austria taken from him. Instead, Otto II gave the Margraviate to a man named Leopold. Like Burchard, we don't know much about Leopold either. He seems to have been a lesser noble from Bavaria with some Frankish ancestry. By all accounts, Leopold effectively led Austria for 18 years, until his death in 994. He came to be known as Leopold the Illustrious, and the dynasty he founded was called the Babenberg dynasty, which would lead Austria until the 13th century. Their coat of arms, two red stripes on a white background, is the basis for the flag of Austria today. More on that topic in the future, although we don't know a lot about Leopold. We do know that, in 1976, when the US was celebrating its bicentennial, the Austrians were celebrating the 1000th anniversary of their founding, or so they claimed, because it was the year that Leopold was named the Margrave. Another commonly cited date for the founding of Austria is 996, which is the first time the name Austria appears in a document. In that year, Emperor Otto III wrote to the Bishop of Freising in Bavaria and referred to Leopold's son Henry, who succeeded his father as Margrave, as ruling a country called Ostarrike. The document is in Latin, which was the language virtually everyone important used back then. Before this document, the Margraviate was referred to in Latin as Marcia Orientalis, the Eastern March. Ostarrike seems to have been a crude translation into the German of the time. Today's German name for Austria,
Österreich,
is clearly cognate with the term used by Otto III, however, and that name means the Eastern Realm. The Babenbergs, descended from Leopold the Illustrious, would rule Austria for around 250 years, extending the territory of the Margraviate and elevating it to a duchy before rule over Austria was taken by the more famous Habsburg family. But the Babenbergs, while less historically significant than the Habsburgs, are not wholly insignificant. So what was life like in the Babenberg era? The first thing to say is that the Holy Roman Empire, and thus Austria, was a feudal society. Most of you will have some idea of what feudal society was like, a hierarchy of power, with serfs, farmers tied to the land, very much like but not exactly slaves, at the bottom and the monarch at the top. In such an arrangement, food and taxes flowed upward and military protection flowed downward. The French historian Marc Bloch, strongly associated with the Unal school of history, described it like this. In feudal society, the characteristic human bond was the subordinate's link with a nearby chief. From one level to another, the ties thus formed, like so many chains branching out indefinitely, joined the smallest to the greatest. Land itself was valued above all because it enabled a lord to provide himself with men by supplying the remuneration for them. Loyalty, Bloch wrote, was the primary social bond that tied feudal society together. However, he cautioned, as a paramount social bond designed to unite the various groups at all levels, to prevent fragmentation and to arrest disorder, it, that is, loyalty, showed itself decidedly ineffective. End quote. Bloch saw German-speaking Europe as having a decidedly distinct form of feudalism. First, he wrote, the distinction between military service and the cultivation of the soil, the real foundation elsewhere of the cleavage between classes, here, that is, in Germany, took longer to establish itself. Military service was primarily the responsibility of the nobility, who would raise armies when necessity called for it. Second, Bloch says, was the existence of significant numbers of what he calls allodial estates, that is, estates not subject to feudal obligations from above. Many of these were held by so-called great men, and it was these allodial estates that largely became the constituent states of the Holy Roman Empire, Austria being one of them. The second thing to say about Austria under the Babenbergs is that the Catholic Church played an enormous role in society. This point should hardly be surprising given the role of the Church in the Holy Roman Empire. But the Church presence was particularly pointed in Austria, where the creation of parishes and monasteries routinely accompanied both territorial expansion and land development. How did these factors affect how the Babenbergs ruled Austria? According to historian Stephen Beller, assessing the relative power situation between Austria and other territories, the Babenbergs' march was thus only one power base among many in the region. Inside the march as well, Babenberg power was far from complete. Much of the best land was possessed by clerical authorities. In the feudal scheme of things, he continues, most of the rest of the territory was controlled by the march's nobility, the Babenbergs only having their domain, that is, manorial or feudal lands, for truly reliable support. Over time, the family was able to increase its direct holdings substantially, by inheritance, purchase, and forfeit, but other noble families remained powerful. There was thus a constant struggle to pacify the march's nobility, either by agreement or by force. Beller continues, in medieval power politics, a family such as the Babenbergs needed great entrepreneurial and diplomatic skills to negotiate the fine line between keeping domestic vassals in line and maintaining and improving its external position. It also needed good fortune and the ability to reproduce itself, hence outlasting its dynastic rivals. For almost three centuries, the Babenbergs played this game quite well. By the 13th century, they had become ducal rulers of a vast swath of the southeastern Holy Roman Empire, of both Austria and Styria, now a part of the Republic of Austria, and were maritally allied to the imperial Hohenstaufen family. More on the Hohenstaufen family later too. He goes on, Babenberg's success was not merely based on skillful risk-taking and astute dynastic politics. However, the Babenberg's march happened to be in one of the more fertile and hence prosperous parts of Central Europe. Once the Magyar threat receded, the land could be cleared and settled in earnest. There were huge opportunities, for the area was very lightly populated. In this wild east, land grants to a noble or a religious order would be made by the emperor or the margrave. And finally, Beller writes, as most of the land came under cultivation, with the growing of high-value crops such as grapevines expanding and new farming technologies, such as the iron-wheeled plow, introduced, the regional economy became more sophisticated, and towns became important commercial and administrative centers. End quote. So that gives us a picture of what Austria looked like under the Babenbergs. The Babenberg family was indeed powerful, but there are other noble families that also held sway. In addition, there are religious authorities wielding substantial power. Navigating these potential rivals for power was a difficult game, but the Babenbergs, Beller tells us, did so fairly well. We'll pick up here in the next episode. Thanks for listening.